You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim, boom! That's a bad outfit. Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me, my turn! Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters, I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Welcome back, Geeksters, to issue 78 of Geek Watch 1. Almost 2 years, 78 episodes. We're doing pretty good, I think, buddy.
I think so. I think we may stick around for a bit now.
And actually, coming up this week, we actually get the anniversary of the original, it's 2 year anniversary of the original idea of Geek Watch 1, really.
That's true. Con on Cobb.
Exactly. Oh. All this happened because of a little thing called Con on the Cobb, which everybody who listens to the show, you know what Con on the Cobb is. And
you better know by now.
Yeah.
Well, that's this week. You still, when this episode drops, you got one more day to figure out how to get over to Con on the Cobb. At least come Friday night.
Oh yeah, big party, and then with brownies and sweet music and good times.
Exactly. We have music, brownies. We did find out there is going to be a charity auction for the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yes.
In Rick's honor. Since this whole party, we're doing a Geek Watch 1 Doctor Who themed party in Rick's honor. That's our last final blow off to say goodbye to our buddy. Come join us. Have a good time.
Dress like your favorite Doctor Who character.
That's right. See, I don't know. I don't cosplay. But I have a couple of Doctor Who shirts, and I think we're going to stop by the mall tonight anyway to check out Hot Topics, so I'm going to get something figured out.
That's okay.
There you go.
I'll figure out something.
Hey, there's enough plain clothes characters
in
the show.
I could just be, I could be, like, victim number three.
you could. I mean, there's, that world is wide, and I managed to actually find my identity a couple of weeks ago in that world. I was just like, I knew I liked it as a fandom of mine, but I never knew exactly where I fit, and I've managed after several years, finally figured out where I fit in, and I'm good. So, you guys will get to see that on Friday night.
Well, I know also, Miss Vicky over here has been working on drinks for the last 2 months or so. She's picked up everything she needs.
No,
we actually have...
I don't isolate more alcohol. I don't have enough stuff.
Oh, well, we're going to pick that up today. Yeah, she has a lot of alcohol. She needs more. So we will have that.
If that doesn't get you to the party, I don't know
exactly.
What
exactly. And enough people other than us have raved about Miss Vicky's drinks that you should have heard about this.
Well, I'm going to have strawberry rum gummies.
Ooh.
And chocolate Kraken.
Chocolate Kraken.
Chocolate Kraken.
Yes. That's one drink I'm making is a chocolate Kraken.
So, see? Come out to Con on the Cob.
It's called Bad Wolf.
She's named all of her drinks after Doctor Who things also, so this is going to be a great time. The panels are coming together. I know we talked with Mike McFarlane. We got the music set up, ready to go. Everything's coming together. It's weird how 2 weeks ago everything was up in the air crazy, and slowly but surely it just
always
falls
happens
together.
Right at the last minute.
Right at the last
together.
Minute. Always like it lands and it's all in.
The last week has been bananas last 2 weeks for us with the doctor's visits and everything else.
Yeah.
Everything's slowly coming together and it's settling out.
That's right.
Which is good because I could use a good 4 days of settled, relaxed Con on the Cob.
Okay. Yeah, relax because that's what Con on the Cob is.
Well,
admittedly, you're not at work, but it's not relaxing.
Comparatively, it is.
Yeah. Well, that's why I take Monday off because that's the vacation day.
Yep.
Right.
Everyone's got the Monday.
So, we've talked a little bit about the panels that are at Con on the Cob. Is there anything we haven't covered that's going to be at Con on the Cob this year?
Well, there's... We don't always mention the vendor hall.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big... It's not as huge as, you know, an Odd Mall sort of thing. And it's kind of like a mini Odd Mall, It is that's a hotel ballroom. Yeah, it's the size of the hotel ballroom. That's a little more game oriented. There's more in the way of gaming vendors in terms of, you know, just your basic game shops are going to be there. With all sorts of tabletop stuff and card games, and there's some people that sell, you know, just a selection of dice.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of thing. So it's a little more gaming-oriented, but we also get some of the craftiness of Odd Mall. We also get some of the authors. Our pal Marcus Calvert's going to be there. And there's going to be a podcast presence outside of that, and as well as some nonprofit-ish groups.
Right.
We'll have tables there.
Speaking of podcasts, we got our buddy Clint Field from Geek Digs going to be coming out.
Right.
Right.
I know the ones I know specifically that are going to be there. Obviously, we're going to be there representing all of our myriad of podcasts.
Right.
Clint's going to be there. Mark and Jim are going to be there recording for Tangibound all weekend. Mm-hmm. Marshall Dice and General Dice from Dice Squad will be there recording Dice Squad episodes all weekend.
Cool.
So, and I know we have podcasting panels too. So if you're a podcaster, come out and hang out. Let us know that you're going to be there.
And you'll find, I mean, the four of us will be around the entire con all weekend. So find us.
You'll find.
Yeah, we check in Wednesday afternoon and don't leave until Sunday night when it's all done.
Yes.
And we're part of a big chunk of the panels, so you'll find us there anyway.
Yes. I don't even know exactly what panels I'm doing. I told Kylan a month ago that, hey, just fill in the panels and tell me what I'm doing.
I have the list, actually, after the show. I have the list. I'll give you a So at least we know where we have to be.
I was about to say, Don has, I was about to say, well, I had to figure out because there's panels that I put, I'm like, I came up with that one. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't remember them when I started reading them off to him. He's like, oh, we're doing that? I'm like, you put it on the list!
I'm like, you know, the thing is, like, when I'll have tons of ideas for panels, and I'm like, there's some I'm like, well, no, that's not going to work, or, well, okay, that sounds like a good one. And then, like, you write them down, and you're not even sure.
Well, the thing is, we were filling in panel spots months ago because we wanted to make sure that all the spots were filled if possible,
and then
if anyone else came in with ideas we could just throw out the ones that we had put in.
And then that's what happened. We started getting contacted by people who wanted to do a panel. I'm okay we'll just
so things
throw
had
this
to
one
shift
out, shift this one out, put this one in its place.
Well, the cool thing it looks like is what we were hoping 2 years ago, we basically started doing, actually trying to put a focus on panels,
right? Mm-hmm.
And then, we weren't even in charge of panels then.
That's right.
No.
But, I know last year, we had probably, 75 to 80% of all the panels were us.
Yeah.
Right.
This year, that number drops.
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe 50% this year, so it's
and then hopefully next year, that number drops to where we're only doing 3 or 4 panels, and we actually
have
a good panel
schedule.
We want other
people to do the panels. We don't want to be stuck doing the panels.
We jump-started it. Right.
I mean, like, you know, we enjoy. But it's one thing to be up there presenting, and it's another thing to be there listening to other people give their point of view on a subject. So,
you know what? Sometimes my favorite thing about Con on the Cob is when you get to sit back and do nothing.
That's true.
Because we're out there. Few times where you actually do get to sit back and just relax and enjoy being at the con with all your friends.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the fun times.
Yes.
So
and we get a little bit more of that this time around.
Yeah.
And now we get to maybe hang out with some of the geeksters and, you know, kind of get to enjoy the Con on the Cob experience.
Exactly. So. I know, definitely, you said you're going to make sure I play at least one game. I'm going to play at least one or two games this
year.
It's amazing. It's primarily a gaming convention, and we never get time to play games.
No, last year we played, like, maybe one.
I think so. Well, HeroQuest? What ends up happening? Mm-hmm. No, Heroescape. Yeah,
Heroescape,
I brought Heroes. Actually, I can bring that again if you wanted to think about a chance to sit down and play the Marvel one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But because that doesn't take any space, that's just in a board game box.
Right.
But the one thing, the place that I end up playing is at parties. Because a couple of the parties, like the Thursday night party, usually has people sitting around playing games. I'll sit in on a card game or something there.
Mm-hmm.
Or not our party, but Saturday night, a couple of the parties have some tables, people sitting around. That's the games I end up playing. I don't get to play any of the scheduled gaming.
Yeah.
So, and actually one of the most fun Vicky and I ever had playing a role-playing game was at Con of the Cob, 3-4 years ago, the Star Wars?
Something like that.
And we played the West End Star Wars game.
Mm-hmm.
This was before. This was when we were volunteering. We were on staff.
Right.
But that was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And playing with your wife, you would know this from playing games, that you can do stuff in the game, and she knows what you're going to do. You don't have to think about it. Right. You don't have to tell her, hey, do this so the cover what
you
I'm doing.
You team up against people is what it comes down to.
No, actually, what we end up doing is we end up winning the game because the other guys were too busy in the bushes fighting each other.
Yeah, they were messing around, goofing off. We were actually playing Jedi.
You had some strategy involved, yeah.
We were. It was like on a jungle planet, and there's some Sith over here talking about something, and what happened was...
We had to take out the monster.
We had to take out the Sith and the monster thing that was with them.
Yeah.
But everybody's hiding in the bushes, and we all have our Force senses closed down. In Star Wars, everybody should know that if you have your Force senses open, you can be detected.
Right.
Well, I opened up just a little bit to see if I could see what was going on a little better, and they immediately knew I was there. So, first thing I said was I dropped my lightsaber and stand up and say, hey, wait, wait, and I told everybody else, don't move. And then as soon as I stood up, Vicky picked up my lightsaber. Mm-hmm. So that later on in the battle, and we hadn't discussed this, I just say, I stick my hand up in the air, and she throws the lightsaber, and I have my weapon in the middle of the battle.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
The other guys were like, they didn't do anything. They were just...
Yeah, they were like, hey, wait, wait, how do we get into the battle now?
No, they weren't even doing that. They were just fighting amongst each other.
But I love the way the GM did it, because have you ever played the West End Star Wars game?
Long time ago.
It's very, very simplified rules.
Mm-hmm.
It was... How many D6s you run, or how many D6 you roll is part of your skill. Right. So it's all on D6s. So if you're really good at something, you may roll 5 or 6 D6s.
Right.
And you have a target number to hit. That's it. All your modifiers and stuff affect your add numbers or subtract numbers from the die roll.
Right.
It was simple, easy. The GM just has to find out, okay, what do you think the difficulty on this would be?
Right.
And the way he did it with the powers, it wasn't like... a lot of times the Star Wars games are set up like Dungeons & Dragons and things, where you choose what spells and stuff you want to do for your Force powers.
Right.
Well, in this, he said, everybody knows Star Wars, and legitimately in Star Wars, if you're a Jedi, you can do what a Jedi can do.
Right.
There is no specific powers.
No.
Like, they have official names, so that you know what they do in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a Jedi, you can do it.
Right.
How difficult it is different.
Right.
So he's like, don't worry about picking powers, just be a Jedi.
Right.
So that's why stuff like that was perfect. When I lift my hand up and she throws it, that's a very low difficulty because that's a standard telekinesis thing.
Right.
That any Jedi can do.
Right.
How often in movies do you see a Jedi just reach out and grab a lightsaber off the floor?
Right.
That you do it without thinking. So it's like, that's one of the few times we actually got a chance to sit down and play a game.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully someone's running some Star Wars, or the Fantasy Flight one's fun, but hopefully we're going to play some games.
Like, started a game and then had to leave.
Yeah, you're halfway through a game, and all of a sudden, something needed, so, oh, wait, I gotta go help out.
It's a little easier for us to do the shorter games.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The ones where players can leave at any given time.
So, remember, that's coming up at Days End in Richfield, Ohio. Go to ConOfTheCobb.com for the info. Remember, the Oddmalls are coming up. Go to Oddmall, or ConOfTheCobb.com.
Yes.
Go to Oddmall.info for all the information on Oddmalls coming up in December and February.
And if you're out on the West Coast, I believe it's mid-November, the Pacific Northwest one is has an odd mall.
You know what? We need to sit down and get David on here to talk about, because we never talked about the West Coast odd mall at all.
No, we don't.
So it's like, I know Andy would love to sit there and Skype with his brother.
See if there's like a big difference.
Exactly.
Well, I just shared for anybody that's, any listeners or friends of mine, on the West Coast, I just shared the dates on my Facebook page.
Okay.
For the West Coast, for the Seattle Odd Mall. So guys, go there and check it out.
That would be an interesting thing, is to actually have us show up at the Seattle Odd Mall. There,
it's in Everett. It's the 19th and 20th of November is in Everett, Washington.
Is that like a suburb of Seattle?
Yeah. All the ones they have are around Seattle, because there's like 3 or 4 of them a year.
They have somewhere in Oregon that they do one also.
Yeah, I don't think they have that on their site, though.
Oh, okay. Because Andy was talking about that.
But Everett is in Washington. They have one in Tacoma, which I think is the spring or summer one that they do.
Okay.
As well. So
Drop me in Bardolph at Mount Adams, it'll be okay.
Yeah, Mount McAdams.
It's not McAdams.
No? It's not
It's Mount Adams.
Oh, okay.
It's not McDonald's, it's Mount Adams.
So, I think that's most of the housekeeping and Mother White stuff, isn't it? And that's all of our stuff for the moment.
Yep.
So, what do you guys... Did we do anything this week, guys?
I did.
I don't know.
Wasn't there a movie that came out?
There was a movie.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, there was a movie. We're gonna talk about it. Doctor Strange. This is your spoiler warning now.
Yeah, you know us.
Just like all these the geek movies we see, we spoil them the same week. Sorry, guys, that's the way it works.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you have plenty of time. Don't cut us off yet, because we still have some other stuff before that. But, Doctor Strange, we're going to spoil everything here in a couple of minutes.
Yep.
But, actually, Vicky did something kind of cool on Friday night.
Right.
She actually, remember this summer she was in the gala event for the art museum?
Right.
Well, the art museum did an actual show, and she got a photo put into it, a gallery showing.
Nice.
Where, so she got to actually go down and check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened there, Vicky?
There was just, there was 78 people, like, pieces. It was pretty big. It was a lot of stuff. The one that won was a National Geographic portrait.
Yeah, it was a collage, wasn't it? It was, everybody's seen this picture. It's probably one of the most famous covers of National Geographic of the girl in the robes kind of looking off to the side.
With the eyes, yeah.
Then they did that in a collage.
Oh, wow.
It was a beautiful painting.
It was huge.
Or, I don't know if it was a painting or mixed media or what it was, but what was it?
It was. They actually took National Geographic and chopped it up.
Yeah, usually the collages, they take the magazines, yeah.
They took the actual magazine and chopped it up. Cool.
I know one of them that was interesting. Didn't they have one, it was a giant physical art piece, but it was made out of balloons, wasn't it? It looked like it did balloon art, kind of like the one we had at Gen Con,
right?
In Origins, and actually had a giant grotto type thing set up.
Oh wow!
It was nuts looking. Vicky, I saw some of the pictures on Facebook. So
yeah, they posted some.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So Vicky actually got into an actual art show. That was actually it's kind of
gallery
cool.
Show.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So hopefully we'll take some more pictures and get some stuff going there. Did you guys actually do anything other than see a movie this week?
It was mostly just seeing a movie this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've
every other night was pretty much busy with all the other stuff, so
yeah.
We were either recording podcasts or having our book group or going to a movie. I mean, it was all a busy week.
True.
And someone had a birthday, so, you know, we got stuck doing birthday stuff.
I told you on Facebook, but happy birthday, brother.
Thank you.
And can I just say, although Andy's not here at the moment, Andy gave Kylan a gift. And it's not so much the gift itself that's important, but the fact that he wrapped it in 46 layers of gift wrap. One for every year of Kylan's life.
Nice.
It took 20 minutes, almost 20, 19 point something minutes for him to unwrap this thing.
Seriously.
Because Illy decided to videotape this while we were at the restaurant. We went for Mexican.
Yeah.
And Illy decided to videotape it while he was unwrapping it, and it was 19 something minutes for him to unwrap 46 layers. And people kept walking by going, oh, happy birthday, like just randomly.
I actually was tired at one point. I was physically tired.
Yeah, he got about halfway through, and there was an envelope that he opened, and it had a paper in it that just said, psych. And then he had to keep going.
Yeah, and I was like...
Yeah.
I was really?
He got to work out for his breath.
I did.
Nice. And so Andy spent, like, what, an hour wrapping it, for goodness sake?
He did.
Or more.
And he basically used everything he could find in the kitchen and in leftover gift wrap. There was foil, there was plastic wrap, there was tape, there was twine.
It was everything. Did you get the plastic bags?
Oh, there were plastic bags. That's
plastic
true.
Bags.
Plastic bags, yeah. So, 46 layers.
Yeah.
So now you know, if you wrap something in 46 layers, it's going to take you about 20 minutes to unwrap it.
I've seen gifts done that way that were just me.
It
was wood.
Well, and at least there was something once he got to the end, though. It wasn't empty. It wasn't just an envelope.
My niece, her best friend, for Christmas last year, wasn't it? They, for each other, they do to see who's going to take longer to open it. And Emmy's dad helped her. So they wrapped it, duct taped it.
Wood?
Built a wood box around it with that was screwed together.
Oh my god!
Screws out.
No, what's the walling?
Formica?
No.
Drywall. Yeah, they drywalled it.
Oh my god.
It took her about an hour to open this up.
Oh my
god. So getting power tools.
Okay, yeah.
That's the win.
That's a new level, power tools.
That's the win.
It didn't want to work.
Yeah, they had to drill the dyes, so they had to take a screwdriver and manually remove the screws.
No.
And if I remember right, it was a couple of shirts or something inside of it.
No, it was a gift card.
No, yeah, it was a gift card.
More tape and duct tape.
Nice.
It was fantastic. And these kids are like 13, 14.
Very nice. More than that, but.
So their parents are both sitting there watching and laughing and loving this.
Yeah, so you got it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You only had things wrapped.
That's
yeah.
true.
You could actually...
I told him the rule was he couldn't pull out his knife and actually cut anything.
Yeah, because I was about to go for the knife and...
there were some layers where Andy decided to tape every single inch of it. So,
she said, no, that's
I'm like, cheating. No, knife. How's cheating?
Or zip ties.
Oh my God, I was just like...
That was fun. But hey, you got a shot of tequila out of it because the wait staff noticed this going on and that it was his birthday, and they brought out the big sombrero after dinner and a shot of tequila, so he got that.
And whipped cream on my face.
Yes, they put whipped cream on a napkin and smacked his face with it, yeah.
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 Welcome to Mexican restaurant. If you've never had this experience, almost all Mexican restaurants do it.
Yeah.
So you got to go to a Mexican restaurant on your birthday. The one over in Arlington, the raccoon will actually, while they're singing, they'll tap you on the top of the sombrero to smack the sombrero while they're going.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
So you're sitting there listening, all of a sudden get whacked in the head and whacked in the head.
Then you get the ice cream shoved in your face.
Yeah, then they give you this nice, beautiful sundae.
Oh, nice.
They used to.
So there we go.
Yeah, so birthday fun. I didn't actually, all I did was watch a movie, because I ended up working every night, overtime. Mm-hmm. I got 12 and a half hours of overtime this week.
Good Lord.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hey, that pays for the hotel for this weekend.
That's true.
The overtime does.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
So,
And the alcohol.
Yeah, it pays for your guys' alcohol. So I don't drink, but Vicky and I bought all the alcohol.
Party investment.
Yes.
Hey, that's why we only do one of these a year.
Exactly.
Because all of us would be broke.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
So, that's what's happened with us. What's happened in the world of geekdom this week?
There wasn't a hell of a lot of news, but there was one thing I know that a lot of people are happy about. They announced that the show Penny Dreadful, which was very popular, but ended.
It's supposed to be fantastic. I guess it's on Amazon now.
But they are much like things like Buffy and Angel and Firefly.
Yeah.
They're continuing it in comic book form.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to take, the comic is going to take place about 6 months after the show ends. It's considered canon for the show universe.
Okay.
So anything that happens in the comic is, you know, continuing in case, you know, the show ever comes back or something. I don't know.
It was a BBC show, wasn't it?
I don't believe Penny Dreadful was BBC. It was just that style. It was gothic, the gothic horror-ish, and it had all the... literary characters in it. That's one of the reasons it was so popular. And I mean, it was dark and it was good. A lot of people liked it.
Yeah.
So that's coming back in comics.
I've not watched it, but I guess the premise was almost like a horror League of Extraordinary Gentlemen style.
No.
So it had a lot, but I'm saying it had all the
no.
Different
it
characters
had
in it
had the
stuff.
Characters. It wasn't the like the story style of League, but
yeah.
It was traditionally gothic, so it wasn't overly scary. Not a lot of hack slash sort of thing, but it was all overall very dark. It was set in Victorian times, but then you had the characters of Victor Frankenstein and Jekyll and Hyde and Dorian Gray. You had all these characters in it.
Yeah.
So it followed their lives to an extent and some of what was in the literature, but kind of expanded beyond that and had them intermingling with each other.
Okay.
So.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know I saw it last time we were recording. I told Vicky, I don't remember if I told you guys at the beginning of the show here that, and I guess it's not new news, but people know that...
Eleven's coming back too.
Yeah. That was announced this week, wasn't it, for Stranger Things?
Yeah,
the character of Eleven is definitely coming back.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite Disney movies of all time is Big Hero 6.
Right.
That's not a secret.
No.
It's my second favorite Disney movie of all time after Aladdin. But I guess Disney XD is still going forward with the Big Hero 6 TV series. Mm-hmm. But I guess the entire voice cast, except for two actors, is coming back to do the TV series.
Cool.
Yep.
Which, if you know animation, that's actually a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because usually, you always have, on an animated movie, they'll do the movie. You might get one or maybe two of the actors that do the TV series, but they never have everybody. I mean, they even have some of the big names, like Jamie Chung is coming back.
Stan Lee.
Stan Lee is coming back doing it for what little they'll do of Fred's dad.
Right.
Alan Tudyk's coming to do it. All these actual decent mid to upper level actors that did the movie are coming back to do this. Damon Wayans is not, but he's a little busy at the moment, I think.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And I forget who the other actor was that's not going to be able to do it. The two of them are being replaced, but that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it'll feel like the movie. Like, that's what I find, like, when they go from movie to show, or even sometimes on the shows from season to season, if they switch out voice actors, no matter how much they sound alike, they still don't quite get there, and you can... It's a little jarring still that you don't quite consider them the same character.
Like the Lilo and Stitch one. Like, I enjoyed Lilo and Stitch. Mm-hmm. Love the movie. But the animated series was definitely different.
Well, actually, from what I've heard, and Bart, I have to check with Bart, because Bart's watched some of it. There was a Lilo and Stitch anime that they made that actually fits right into the movie, because it's basically Lilo started to grow up and Stitch finally finds her again.
Yeah.
Oh,
and this one's supposed to be amazing.
It's not. It's not bad, and at least they kept Stitch looking like he should. They just messed up the other characters and made them look too anime.
Yeah,
that's the problem. But it's not bad.
But yeah, for the way they're for doing a series adaptation of a movie, I guess this is one of the better ones.
Okay. Yeah,
I remember back in the '90s though, they did some really good, like the Aladdin TV show. Felt just like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the actors were different, but it was right.
Right, yeah.
And there was a couple other ones they had done back in the mid-90s with the old Disney Saturday, or Disney Afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
They did the two-hour block of Disney cartoons after schools.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And some of the shows there, they did pretty good with.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, because I think some of that is the amount of content you have out there now.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 7 kids shows that are showing cartoons and kids stuff 24/7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have content for that.
Right.
And so you're going to get... Some stuff is going to hit, and a lot of stuff is not.
Right.
But for kids, all of it hits, just about. Mm. They've learned how to get kids to watch TV.
Right.
Kids know what stations to turn to, and so, yeah.
The other bit of news I found last night that was interesting was from Arrow, that Lexa Doig, if you guys remember, I guess she was in the 4400 I've not seen, and a couple other shows, but remember Andromeda with Kevin Sorbo?
Yes.
She was in that. She was actually the android on the ship.
Okay.
She represented the ship.
Right.
And she's been in a bunch of other sci-fi stuff also. Most geeks would recognize her if you saw her. She's actually coming to Arrow this season as Talia al Ghul.
Cool.
Yep.
So, the question, remember when Nissa al Ghul came to Arrow first, everybody's like, wait a minute, who's this? No one ever heard of her. What's happened to Talia? Well, we're finally going to get to see Talia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, once again, they're mining from the Batman camp, but a lot of that I think is because they're not allowed to use Batman.
Right.
If they're allowed to, they would be in the shows all over the place.
They're just throwing in all the characters they can for Arrow.
Oh yeah.
Well, but see, they're teasing at another bat adjacent character, and
which one are you talking about?
The Question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because you know they mentioned Hub City rather prominently, more than once.
And it's been coming up more in the chatter on various blogs and stuff about will Arrow have the Question.
Yeah.
And usually when that starts, it means that character's
coming. And I think the Question and Arrow, in this version of Green Arrow, will work well together, much like the Question and Batman work well together,
now,
too. So,
which Question are we going to get, though? Is it going to be Renee? Okay.
I'm thinking it'll be Vic Sage.
Well, it would be interesting. Well, no, because that's a different... I'll say that's a different universe. With Maggie Sawyer over on Arrow, or on Supergirl, if you brought in Renee Montoya over on Arrow. Oh.
But see, the thing is...
That'd be interesting, but they're not the same universe.
The thing is, they had Montoya over on Gotham.
Yes.
And now she's... No.
She's there not. Sometimes, but...
I think she's... Did they kill her, or did she leave?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't remember what they did to her.
Gotham
just like kills everybody. So.
The body count is so high on Gotham. I'm not sure if Montoya really died or.
Hey, at this point, I don't know if James Gordon's going to make it to reach the time of Batman shows up.
I'm still enjoying Gotham, but wow. Like this season,
I like Gotham as a non-Batman show. It's like it's not anymore. Like it started out like as a Batman tease kind of show, but it's moved so beyond that I'm just kind of interested to see what characters they bring in and go on with the story.
Yeah. It's finally now got to the point where it's basically Gotham is an Elseworlds story.
Yes,
oh, it is. Yeah,
yeah. It's
straight up. It's not originally it came in as an it looked and was packaged as an origin of Jim Gordon, origin of Batman.
Yeah.
At this point, it's the origin of an Elseworlds Gordon and Batman.
That's
because it has changed the characters and storylines so much from the mainstream bat plots that there's no way that it has any role to play.
And that's okay. Like, you know, that's what they're going to do,
it's okay because they can do what they want with the character. Like,
right.
Look what they've done with Mad Hatter.
Right.
The past couple of weeks. Like, he's been awesome. Like, I love Mad Hatter in the books. He's so creepy and crazy. And when he was in Secret Six and everything, he was awesome. And, but he's always been that really kind of gross, trolly character.
Right.
Yes. And they've changed him for Gotham.
What's weird is, he was, first came in here, it was a gross, trolly yes. character. Who unnaturally the affection for his sister and all yes. this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's got such a sinister twist to him.
Right. And actually he has quite the feel of a Joker. The kinda. Way he wants everyone to be insane now. Right. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. It just, he has a different feel.
And, but it, and it worked.
Yeah.
It's, and it's weird because Gotham has this great way of taking, okay, outside of Penguin and Riddler, and I guess you'll throw Poison Ivy in there. Outside of those three, they have this great way of taking fringe characters. Now, I'll say fringe in the sense of non-comic reading people.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take these fringe characters, and they will just present them in a way that makes the characters engaging.
Well, one of the prime examples is Victor Zsasz.
Yes.
Yeah. I had to actually look him up because I hadn't been he's been in Rebirth now.
Right.
So I know him from the comics now, but I didn't know the character before Gotham.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Now, there's a book, the funny thing is, thinking about all this, there's, back in the late 80s, I believe it was, there was this series of encyclopedias. One was like an encyclopedia, action heroes, one's an encyclopedia of superheroes. And I forget the guy that wrote them. But the funny thing is, I was going through, and there was something in there for Vixen that was barely a paragraph.
Yeah.
There was something in there for, the guy from Flash that,
Which one?
Vibe.
Okay.
And they had Vibe. Barely a paragraph. Mm-hmm. It's funny that a lot of these characters that were barely mentioned in the 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm.
are now starting to figure prominently within the DC yeah. universe.
Well, you get that. You get the same thing on both DC and Marvel
yes.
wikis. Mm-hmm. When you look them up, sometimes there's one line about the character, but then it has five paragraphs about their television appearance.
Yes.
Right.
Well, that's something that DC television has done. I mean, especially Berlanti and Kreisberg with the Flash, Arrow, and now Supergirl universes. Mm-hmm. But you can add Gotham in there, too, is that they're doing that. They're not just giving you what the mass media, everybody knows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can only do so much of that.
Right.
Only so many people, you can only do so much of a story with Superman and Luthor.
Right.
Eventually you gotta get into Parasite and some mm-hmm. of these other guys that no one's ever heard of.
Well, the right. other thing is, I had a coworker who's not into comics, but he watches Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me and he said, well, who's the police captain going to be? What's happening with the drops of blood and stuff? And I was trying to think about it, and
that's one thing I'm still not sure who they're turning him into.
And I'm like, honestly, I'm kind of hoping he becomes Solomon Grundy because
Ooh.
Of
See,
because of
it.
His he's formidable. Like he's a big guy.
That's interesting.
And I thought, based on his storyline and his personality, it's a possibility.
It is. And I'm like, and
but that's not going to help anyone who doesn't know the comics for me to say, yeah. oh yeah, he might be Solomon
but
Grundy.
See, this,
you'll get a look of what?
And this his version of Solomon Grundy, for some reason, I'm liking more so than the way Grundy appeared for like 3 seconds in Flash.
Well, that's what I mean. Like it could
That wasn't even officially. No one ever said that was actually officially. That was a nod to Grundy.
Yeah,
I don't think that was actually
was
supposed
official,
to be Grundy.
Yeah.
Right. And see, and I'm like,
but I mean, he's you know the actor. He's played the Thing, so he's got the big rocky guy kind of thing going on.
How many actors
actually liked
out
him
there?
Thing.
He was pretty good.
How many actors out there have done that DC Marvel crossover?
Oh, there's a lot.
there's a ton.
There's been so many Marvel movies and the comic book TV series in the last 15 years that most people, if they've done one, they're willing to do a bunch of them, so they'll actually will work both sides.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I mean, they're not concerned about the company. They just want to do the comic.
I mean,
books.
Chris Evans
has done every comic.
He was Johnny Storm, and then he was in the losers, which is Vertigo, which DC, and then he hopped back over. And
I was wondering where the DC connection was.
He did independent publishing with Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, he's got Pilgrim, and then he's
Captain America.
He's Captain America, Steve Rogers. And you know, and there's a ton of characters out there, a ton of actors out there who have earned their geek cred by in one form or another from hopping over for. And because it used to be, well, you know, this person they worked with this company, all you'll see is that company. But and I'm loving now that that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these actors are no longer above doing superhero work.
They see the numbers and they're like, "Well, I got to get in on that."
Exactly. the top grossing, and actually for acting, that makes a difference because not as much the box office makes a difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But you start getting actual residual checks the more they play it on TV. The more they
And more actors, it's being acceptable for them to be geeks. And what's the biggest thing a geek doing? Playing your superhero.
Yep,
exactly.
I mean, look at Cumberbatch. Dresses Doctor Strange, buying Doctor Strange comics.
Yeah,
exactly.
Comic I'm like, you know.
And the funny thing is, he actually came out with a comment saying, "Well, if the movie tanks, I'll go work in a comic shop."
you know, I have to admit, like, how, you know, 20 years ago, actors would have been, like, sort of winking at the screen, like, "Oh, look at what I'm doing, and this cute." But you have actors that, when it comes time for research, They're grabbing every graphic, every trade, every issue. The guy that's going to be Deathstroke,
Joe Manganiello.
Yeah.
He as soon as it was announced he was going to be the character, he posted a photo of his research, which was basically every single comic book that had the character in it.
So hopefully he went all the way back to Wolfman and Perez's Titans run.
He had old ones.
Who Deathstroke is, that's where he came from.
You know what? I have the first appearance of Deathstroke. And which was Deathstroke, and then of course, like I think the next issue, you got Ravage as well. And I'm sitting there and I'm reading this. And I remember Deathstroke, who now back then he was known as the Terminator.
Yes.
Before the Terminator movie came out.
Yeah, he was it was officially Deathstroke the Terminator, wasn't
right,
he?
Right. Yes. And then because the Terminator movie came out, and now it was no legal issue. It was just that. The movie Terminator started getting a little bit more popularity, so they decided to just go with Deathstroke, which was a smart move on DC's part, because really, I don't know, for some reason, I think a mercenary called Deathstroke, I like that better than the Terminator. I don't know, like just...
Well, the Terminator works for an assassin.
It does,
and but he's more than just an assassin at this point.
Right, and I just like Deathstroke. That just... I don't know. It screams finesse for me, and because of the character, the character himself, you know, his Slade Wilson is such an amazing character, and for us to get the perfect portrayal of him, I think, in Arrow, it's going to be interesting to see how they portray him. Although the portrayal in Arrow was different from his origin in the comics.
Well, it was closer to where he is in comics now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him on the big screen. Mm-hmm. But I'm so excited.
Funny when Manu Bennett heard that Joe was doing basically his character.
Yeah.
He basically said, "Well, if you want to go ahead and take that character, I'll be in the next Magic Mike movie for you."
Well, you know, you guys remember within the first scene in Arrow on the island, and you see the mask with the arrow on the stake. Now I look at Dawn and I go, "That looks like Deathstroke."
Forgot about that.
The start.
Because we know Deathstroke is coming for the 100th episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
How much would you bet that's what sets that up?
It might, because I'm...
Because they have to set that up.
Yeah.
They do, and
end of the season is when he gets rescued from the island.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, that's true.
And I'm so he's got to do the whole Bratva thing, get back to the island, and get all scraggly again before they before they get him.
That's true. That's true, because he got rescued from the island. So
and yeah. He was all like scraggly and shipwreck looking. And
I think something happens with Dolph Lundgren's character to put him back on the island, because his character's coming in, I think, the next episode or the one after.
Okay,
and he's a Russian mobster.
Yeah,
see,
so something happens when
Dolph Lundgren, the fight scenes between Dolph Lundgren and Stephen Amell.
That's going to be pretty awesome.
I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it.
It's going to be Rocky all over again.
Oh, man. That's gonna be...
That actually brings up a meme thing I saw on the internet this week that it was something about Steven Seagal now has his Russian citizenship or something, was granted that. Yeah. So now we just need Ivan Drago to become American.
I'm like, you know what? We can take him. I mean, he has a master's in what, chemical engineering.
He's not he's not really Russian though.
I know he's not really Russian. Okay. look, we saw the guy singing.
Hey, he played a Russian on TV.
That means he's Russian. It's Russian enough.
We know that he can sing and dance and just look up A Little Less Conversation. By
put Dolph Lundgren, a little less conversation, you'll get the video.
You'll get the video.
It's something to see.
And you're not going to be able to scrub your brain. It is the weirdest thing in the world, but it's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, he's doing martial arts moves as he's singing and dancing. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Like, he's like breaking bricks and stuff, which I'm like...
It was an intro for an award show.
Yeah, it was an intro for an award show.
So it's a big dance number.
Perfect. But... since we've been in comic books this whole time, but we need to actually talk about some Doctor Strange.
We do. Let's get some Strange.
Okay, let's... Vicky, why don't you start with... it's time to get Strange in here.
I had to do it.
Vicky, what was your impression... Now, you and I both got into this, and everybody knows we're not huge Marvel fans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I knew who Doctor Strange was. It's hard to not know comic books and not have heard of him.
No, he's not Gambit.
Yeah, but what was your impressions of the movie, not having really known much about Doctor Strange?
I liked it. It was really trippy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was some backlash with the one character.
Which one?
Ancient One.
Yeah.
Ancient One. Yeah.
Which I can I don't know how she originally was supposed to be, or he, or it, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand how what she was doing and why.
Yeah.
Right.
They explained it not directly, but it you understand, which was. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's the way you said that there. That's awesome. That in this one, they do this a lot in movies, that they'll totally change race and race, sex, everything of a character when they find someone else they want to do it. In this one, they actually address that.
Mm-hmm.
And it said at one point she started out as a Celtic wizard.
Yeah.
And then worked her way through to where she's at now.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I thought that's a great way to do that.
Right.
That and most geeks would recognize that and say, you know what? Okay, I'm okay with this. Mm-hmm. With you change the character. In having to change the backstory just a little bit, that makes it work.
Well, yeah, and in the instance with her, they needed to mention it, like, because Mordo, technically they changed his race.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter to the character what race he was.
No.
But with her, it kind of mattered because of the whole ancient and, you know, being where they were and all that kind of thing. So it made sense to at least mention it and why she was who she was.
And see, there's a little bit of politicking that went on, because the thing is, they wanted this movie to be able to play in China.
Yeah.
And so that's why they had to change the location of Kathmandu from Tibet. Because they actually wanted to film in Tibet.
Yeah.
But if they filmed in Tibet...
And there's political issues with China and Tibet.
Yeah.
So.
In China, they wouldn't have been able to show the movie in China.
That's why they were saying it, what, Kathmandu?
Yeah. Where was it at originally? Just in the mountains in Tibet, or what?
No, it was still Kathmandu, but it was still... But they were... The plan was to actually film in Tibet.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they couldn't, and so...
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that you have to adjust things just for political reasons so that you can make money in a certain country.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? It's unfortunate, but...
The weird thing is that people are actually, at this point, thinking about that they want that Chinese money.
Right.
Because there's enough people in China now that you're making enough money that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that was the thing. It was like, well, you know, do we stay true to the origin and honor the culture, and do we film there? But if we do that, then you're also making a financial decision as well when you do that.
Well, that's another one that was awesome in this, that they basically, the way they portrayed the magic in this, it mm-hmm. wasn't any one culture that generates what this is. This was a worldwide thing.
Right.
There was, this is not just Tibetan mysticism. This is not just European wizardry.
No.
This is sorcery in general that the entire world uses the same way.
Right, and I think that's, for them to take a worldwide approach definitely helped. And I'm a casual Doctor Strange fan,
mm-hmm.
and even as a casual Doctor Strange fan, I was extremely pleased with the way everything was handled. And the truth is, had they gone, you know, comic book authentic with the portrayal of the ancient, there would have been only one female on the screen the entire time. So I think it was important.
And that would have created more of a backlash.
That would have created more of a backlash. I think that for the sake of it being inclusionary, you needed to do that. But it was still true to the essence of the character and the story, in my opinion.
Okay.
I had no issue with it.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really liked, what was the actress that played the ancient one?
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
Wow. Like, wow, seriously. It was, I could see myself walking.
She did a great job for a character that could have been very, very repressed and staunch and severe, and, you know, like, that's the sort of character you usually get with an ancient one. They're usually very serious about everything, and she was serious, but at the same time, she was relaxed.
Mm-hmm. She reminded me of my old Kung Fu master. it just had that feeling for me, like, I've met this person before, I know this person exists, and it reminded me of Master Wasel.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's cool is that actually that her being loose like that kind of fits in with what you find later on in the movie, where she's actually been breaking the rules she's teaching.
Yeah.
Right.
But I love the way they do that, because they actually explain it so that it feels like she's breaking the rules to pull the energy from the dark universe, or what was that called, but to keep her alive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those that you get the feel, I was telling Vicky, of, you can tell she's doing this and she knows the cost that it pulls, and that's why she's made those rules. Knows that, you know what, I do this and it keeps me alive, but she can see the danger that's there, mm-hmm. and that's why she's made the rules and said you're not allowed to do it. That's one of the forbidden techniques. Knowing that very few people will be able to use this and not be tainted and changed by mm-hmm. the process. Which obviously we see with, I forget the name of the villain, but the main villain in this one, that he does the same technique, and it doesn't go the same way for him.
No.
Well, the thing is, it's not that he does the same technique. He dives into it.
Exactly.
That's all he wants exclusively. She is pulling small bits to be able to maintain an immortality and that kind of thing. Whereas he is wholeheartedly indulging.
Exactly.
That's what he's following at that point. And that's kind of why it doesn't go as well.
Well, another one I didn't know about in the movie, I mean, I know people made a big deal about Doctor Strange's cape. I didn't realize the cape is a character unto itself.
Well, the thing is, in the movie it is. In the comics, not so much.
No, like, it's an enchanted object.
Yeah.
But it didn't have its...
its own personality.
I liked that it did, though.
I loved it and it worked perfect for this movie being a magic mm-hmm. movie. It felt like a Disney object.
Yeah.
It, you know what? It reminded me of Carpet from Aladdin.
Yep, absolutely.
It was Carpet mm-hmm. from Aladdin.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We saw Carpet on the screen.
And I was excited when it came to that point, because I was like... I knew there was clips out there and trailers that had bits of, with mm-hmm. the cape in it. I purposely was not watching the trailers, and I knew they were doing something with the cape, and I got excited when they were like walking through and it was in the cabinet, and I'm like, he's getting the cape, he's getting the cape, he's about to get the cape.
The way he got the cape was amazing. In the middle of the battle, out of nowhere, the cape.
I knew it. They was like, that, they're gonna smash that glass. It's gonna happen.
Yep. But. And just some of the stuff, the fight scene where the cape is throwing the dude around.
Oh my god.
And he's stuck on the floor, like, what's going on?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, and the other thing they mentioned, that the cape is fickle. The fact that the cape did choose him.
Well, they had established that earlier, saying that, he's like, well, what relics can I use? It's like, You don't get to choose that. The relic chooses you. But well, the cape chose him.
The cape is the kind of when they say it's fickle and it's not going to choose just anyone. It means when it chooses someone, it's going to protect that someone. You know, in any means possible.
And the one thing that impressed me is once he does get the cape and you see him walking with the entire. From what I've seen, that was Doctor Strange the comic books directly onto the. Absolutely. I mean, the facial structure, the not just the goatee and the way he was costumed up. He looked like Doctor Strange. I think they even had a little bit of gray in his head around the temples, didn't they?
Yep. Yeah, and they waited for Cumberbatch to be available for the movie.
Yeah.
They rescheduled filming and everything so that he was done with Sherlock and whatever else he was involved in at the time, so that because they wanted him for this movie.
Well, this is one of the few the ones I've seen that actually, because they've done this before. Most of the Marvel movies, you get a really big name actor to play the role.
Yeah.
And stuff like, you look at Iron Man, you still see Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Thor was close, because Thor, it's Chris Hemsworth, and you kind of lose that, but it's still Chris Hemsworth there. This, I lost it, it was Cumberbatch, that was Doctor Strange.
Yes.
No, you had, like, Thor chugging the beer, though.
Well, yeah, the scene at the end was awesome. And then, yeah, Jesse and Vicky were thinking, dude, I want that beer mug.
I didn't say that, but, I thought it was great.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is one of the first times that I didn't forget who the actor was, but I didn't see the actor on screen playing a role.
He got into the... He was the character, for sure.
Well, like, you watched... Didn't I show you the Doctor Strange animated series, animated movie? Yes.
I want to see it. It's on Netflix. I've not seen it yet.
Okay, and see, I think it's good that you watched the movie first. Go and watch the animated, and you will be...
I mean, the animated is the origin story, and it's kind of like, having seen that and knowing what was going to happen in the movie, I was still amazed at how they showed it in the movie.
Like, yeah.
That's, even though I knew the plot points and what was going to happen, it was just fantastic what they did.
Like, it's... And
that car crash? Holy crap!
I'm serious, because I'm sitting there like...
And you're like, is it going to stop?
Like, my hands were hurting, and I'm just
showing
like...
the crunch, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what got me, though, is they show him, he's out on the side of a mountain, and all this happens, boom, and then they show when he lands in the water, he's in the city on the river, on the waterfront. He's in the docks of the city.
Well, I mean, he went halfway down the mountain, though.
But still,
the city's in the background.
Like, wait a minute, I thought he was out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I don't think he was actually in the middle of nowhere. He was living in the more mountainous areas, which is not actually far from the city.
I do want his apartment.
Oh, yeah.
That's a beautiful one.
Oh, yeah.
But,
if you can afford it, sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, in the beginning of that scene, there was a reference that, I guess it wasn't who I thought it was. First thing I thought, because his friend is telling him about all these different people that he could actually, because at this point, Stephen Strange is one of the greatest neurosurgeons in the world. He has his pick of whatever he wants to do to fix people.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear about this Air Force colonel who's been damaged in an experimental armor.
Yep.
But I guess it's not, I thought it was War Machine.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. I thought it was War Machine from Civil War.
Right. No, because here's the thing, and we're talking about this on Mighty Marvel Geeks. We have, if you rewind and you think back to Captain America's Winter Soldier, and they were talking about the purpose of the those helicarriers.
Yeah.
And they said that there were people who were considered threats. Stephen Strange is on the list.
Yeah.
And that was in Winter Soldier. That was in Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier.
Oh,
was
I didn't
3 years
on
ago.
The list. Okay. Mm-hmm.
His name was on the list as the neurosurgeon, though.
Yeah.
Not as Doctor Strange.
So we're not sure if this movie.
But see, it can't be Rhodey.
No.
Because of the timelines. No,
no. There's another one. They said who it was. I think I was talking to you about it, babe. Who was it that they said was actually that Air Force colonel? It was actually a hammer tech suit or something.
Right? Okay, yeah.
Are you talking about the one that was injured?
I thought it was War Machine, but it's not. We discussed this, I forget.
That's all you had said, you thought it was War Machine.
Yeah.
I heard it somewhere that it's not War Machine, it was actually, it's from one of the movies, though.
It something that you guys were talking, you were probably
Well, because there was, there was, if you look at when, see, the timeline is an issue with this because of the mid-credit clip.
Yes.
And Thor meeting Doctor Strange, based on...
And he's looking for Loki.
That being after all the rest of the movies have happened.
Right. Or no, he's working with Loki in that one.
Yeah, so the timeline...
Looking for their father.
...of when he was in the accident was a little earlier than the most recent couple of movies. because it had to be, because it took months for him to recover.
Right. Yeah. So, see, now, at the beginning of the movie, you see Avengers Tower. So, it was definitely before Avengers.
Yes, that's the one, that's the other reference, was the fact that it's the old Avengers Tower.
Right.
So, it's before the, what was it?
Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron's where they changed the tower, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, it's before Age of Ultron. So, I'm thinking...
There's so many Marvel movies, it's hard to... It's starting to blur some.
It's kind of like, what order
so,
do
we put the thing is, first Avengers... So, when you get the first Avengers movie, and then you get Iron Man 3, which is when... So, that's when he runs the whole thing with Justin Hammer.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, so I'm thinking... So, that would put the beginning of Doctor Strange between Avengers and Iron Man 3.
It's possible.
But then you have to think, by the end of Doctor Strange, New York is not in a mess.
No.
Yeah.
All the buildings are built, etc. So there's been... that. It's way after any invasion. Everything's been repaired.
That's because damage control came through.
Exactly. Well, there you go.
I would say that...
Or is it before the destruction?
No.
Not because he meets up with Thor.
Because now he's meeting with Thor.
Okay, yeah.
Because meeting up with Thor is after Odin's already been banished to Earth and he's looking for him. So it's after the rest.
So I would say the movie ends now. Okay. The movie ends after the events of Civil War.
So that could be a clip that's actually leading into Ragnarok.
Yes.
That's what I figure it is.
Yes.
Okay. And it's his first, it's Strange's first meeting with any of the Avengers. That's his first connection.
The guy who actually points him to Kathmandu, who's actually a sorcerer, decided to go back and just walk around. Is he a character that was actually in the books?
I don't know.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know. The Benjamin Bratt's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one, while you're looking that up, the other one is, it threw me off at the beginning and it took a little while before when they were saying Mordo, then eventually it clicked. It's like, wait a minute, isn't Mordo supposed to be Baron Mordo dude that's like a villain?
Well, see,
at the end they pay it off.
But see, Mordo was a student of the Ancient One, just like at the same time that Stephen Strange is there.
Green Lantern did it first. Think about it. Mordo was his trainer. Who learned from the Ancient One. Sinestro is Hal Jordan's trainer in the Green Lantern Corps. He was a partner of Hal Jordan's original ring bearer.
Let me see.
Do we have to look at what year they each came out?
That's who we
did it first?
Okay,
Come on now.
Are
you doing Strange?
Because I didn't know Doctor Strange's origin, I didn't see that correlation before, but that's a very similar story structure. It's probably just a trope that they do through time. I mean, that's... Your trainer becomes evil, and you have to take out your trainer.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's interesting how close it is between the two companies.
Yeah, maybe there's a movie called Star Wars where there's a kind of a... Student becomes the master.
Student goes back.
Hal Jordan was first appeared in October 1959.
Okay. And I know Doctor Strange was after that.
Stephen Strange is like 63, so... Yeah.
So, see, they sold it from DC. Like I said, But then again, if you look in the 60s, both companies did the same thing over
and
over.
They all had the same story with different characters.
So,
they stole from their own storylines. If you look at stuff from, like, the 40s and 50s,
right.
They did those exact same storylines in the same book in the 60s and 70s.
They did. It was like, well, you know, you did that last week. Okay, we'll do it this weekend, and, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, I just, at the end of the movie, it dawned on me like that. I was like, dude, that's... just cool how close it is to the Green Lantern origin story.
Right.
Because, really, in the DC universe, if you look, that was a type of magic in the DC universe.
Right.
The Green Lantern's power rings.
True. That's true. It's the ring is just a conduit for... Because that's at that cosmic level of power that...
Exactly.
Which is a form of magic. And so it's... So what is interesting that you end up with that in... Between Doctor Strange, between Stephen Strange and Mordo, but they changed the character of Mordo because
they actually, I think they almost made him more Sinestro-like at the very end.
Yeah,
because he's going through. He's like, you know what? If I can't deal with the way you're doing it, I'm going to do it my own way. And he basically starts stealing the power from the other wizards.
Right.
That's a straight up Sinestro move.
And see, in the books, Mordo was motivated by jealousy and lust for power.
Okay.
Whereas, but in the movie, he's definitely more, he's more legalistic. Like, everything has is about law for him.
Yeah.
And
well, it is in the, natural law.
In the natural law.
Just in the natural way.
Like, you know, his issue with being a wizard is that you're manipulating natural law.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, that, you can tell that's the thing that breaks his brain.
Yeah, because Dr. Stephen Strange was able to win this by breaking time.
Right. And then, you know, and it's almost like it bothered him that Stephen was able to do this and get away with it. And he's like, you know, the bill must come due. Like, it was almost like he wanted failure, but it didn't come in the way that he wanted it.
So he's going to make it happen in his own
way. So he's going to make it happen in his own way. And I don't know, and he's obviously upset with the Ancient One's decision and Ancient One's admission, but he's also upset that the Ancient One wasn't made to pay the ultimate price. The Ancient One made that decision on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's definitely all about
making, I think he felt betrayed, though.
Yeah, oh, he definitely
was betrayed
did.
By the Ancient One.
Because the Ancient One made these rules, but she doesn't follow
them
herself.
Yeah, she made the rules, she didn't follow them, and he's been trained by her, and she's been hiding this.
Right,
and in terms of, he was her top student. So it was kind of like he felt that he should know everything by that point.
Yeah, this kid who just made, in his point of view, this kid who just learned, is figuring this out, gets to know all these secrets, and I don't get to know.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been here for years.
A bigger connection between them, but she realized that he actually is the one that should be following in her footsteps. Anyway, he's the one that's meant to be the Sorcerer Supreme,
right?
And even though she had been training Mordo for it because she didn't know about Stephen Strange.
Well, no, she actually, in that last scene of hers, before she dies, she says she actually
she had been
playing with time and no
that's
one knew.
Right.
And she knew this point would come, that Strange was coming.
Because she had been seeing it,
Which is, I believe, that's the reason why she broke her own rule in the past and tapped in to stay alive. Cause she
to
knew,
wait, yeah.
She knew, you know, how many thousands of years.
That's true.
To wait for this one guy that she knew was coming.
Yeah.
Right.
So she knew she had to be ready to show him this stuff.
Right. And, you know, I get it, you know, and sometimes, but see, my alignment is chaotic good. Okay, so sometimes you have to do the wrong thing for the right reason. I embrace that, you know, but
I mean, just think about, like, the whole premise of the movie and what happened in the end and what Strange had to do to manipulating time in order to save everything. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do, but he had to do it.
That Hong Kong scene was, I think, one of the best scenes. You gotta love the whole frozen time and then stuff moving backwards, then moving forward through the same. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I've never seen time move backwards. Meanwhile, you're fighting forwards.
You're moving forwards and it's moving backwards. And that
so you're
was
ducking
awesome.
Stuff as it's fixing itself.
That was fantastic.
Itself. It's, they showed it twice. And for some reason, we went to Cinemark and they had the XD. They only had one 3D showing. It was a 10 o'clock showing.
Oh, wow.
So we saw it in 2D.
Yeah.
Which, this is one movie, once you've seen it, how trippy and everything flips, this is a movie that needs to be seen in 3D if 3D works for you.
Right.
So it's like, that's, Vicky and I were saying, we eventually got to go back.
I consider this an IMAX to get an even bigger screen experience.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, XD is as close as you're going to get to IMAX, and it's just about the same, not quite. But just the one thing that got me and how beautiful it looked was the walk when the dude was flipping the pasta or whatever, and it's frozen. It's like, dude, that was perfect.
You can see every little bit of what's there. Yeah,
it was beautiful, and it's just frozen.
And
time.
I mean, the one thing that it's funny because a lot of people aren't bringing it up, but the whole final battle when Strange is up in the other dimension,
yes.
And it's being repeated like Groundhog Day over and over, and he's
that
being killed
fantastic.
In so many different ways. But the fact is, that entire scene and how it finally plays out is a message. It proves that violence doesn't solve everything.
No.
Yeah, this
the
is
whole
one Marvel
he was
movie
not
that fighting
back.
Didn't do it.
He was not fighting back. He was standing there. He wanted to negotiate the entire time. That's
exactly.
All he wanted to do was negotiate. And well, everything was getting thrown at him. He kept getting killed. And he's like, I can do this as long as you need to.
That was the idea. The other guy gave him that idea.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was the message of this entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch, Doctor Strange, through this entire movie, never is on the offensive.
Right.
No.
The entire time he's on the defense.
Yep.
Yes.
He's fighting back, but he's never initiating the fight.
Exactly. Right.
No.
And, I mean, even when he's defending the sanctums, when he's mm-hmm. using with the cape.
Yep.
The cape, he goes one way, and the cape finally gets him to grab the trap right. on the wall.
That's right.
And all it did was lock him down so he couldn't fight no more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything he did, this is the first Marvel movie that was a non-violent message.
Yep.
The message was non-violent through the entire thing.
It was.
Even though it was a Marvel movie, there's plenty of fighting, there's plenty of all this yep. stuff going on, but the main character is trying not to fight.
Right.
Well, I mean, he was so upset with himself having had taken a life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like he even wants to embrace the Hippocratic Oath as a sorcerer. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You mm-hmm. know, yeah. It was one of those things that you know, watching the Marvel movies, you're just so used to death being a part of the equation.
And fighting.
And yeah. fighting. And then, but then, like, Doctor Strange is sort of like, why? You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was cool to have that as mm-hmm. the theme.
Yeah, this is the first time they've done that, to where they said, the main character said, you know what? And the nice thing was, it's very easy to make that very blatant and right on the yeah. front and saying, hey, this, I'm not going to do this. I didn't notice that point of this movie until we're sitting here talking about it now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
The whole time I'm watching the movie, then all of a sudden you sit back and realize, oh, wait a minute. There was fighting in this movie, but it wasn't him instigating a fight.
Right.
Mm-mm, no.
This was a very passive movie.
Yeah.
It was.
It's kind of like the lesson was there, but it's not until you just stop and think about it, and mm-hmm. it wasn't in your face, and it was just like the spell books, where the spells were there and the warnings yeah. came after.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with the Easter egg that the little nod that the directors claim they didn't do on purpose. But you had the entirety of the movie, and the very, very, very end of the credits was the little message about distracted driving.
Yeah, <I'm> like,
I noticed that on there. I'm like,
they
what's
claimed
that
they okay. didn't do it in that order on purpose, but I'm like, mean, you know. It was kind of cute that it was good yeah. that they put it there, but
well, yeah. another one that pushes this was when Mordo's teaching Strange how to fight, mm-hmm. and the scene about the relics.
Yep.
The whole time Mordo's like, fight back, fight because your life is going to depend on this.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Strange is still just trying to ward him off. That's yeah, all he's
right.
doing.
Right,
that's true.
He wouldn't actually go on the offensive.
Well, you have Muhammad Ali, who one of the greatest. One of his strategies was called the rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, he's gonna make you work, and he's just gonna bob and weave, mm-hmm. he's gonna dodge, and then by the time it's all said and done,
you tire out your enemy. You tire them out.
Well, yeah. Vicky actually had a really good point here. In the battles, you have a lot of people that are either your swords or your shields in the battle. But what were you saying?
He's a shield.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange is a shield.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look, the weapon he came up with
mm-hmm.
wasn't really, because they said the magic makes a weapon.
Right.
The artifact that chose him was not an offensive, that cape was a defensive mm-hmm. weapon.
Yeah.
The cape of levitation, it helps him get away.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It did things so that he would
he manipulated time throughout the movie, mm-hmm. he froze time or set it back so that it could repair things and protect people that way, even though they'd already been injured or killed. Like, he saved Wong
yeah.
for
yeah.
the sake at the end because he put time back.
Well, the weapon that they're like, make a weapon. He made just a string of plastic, and what mm-hmm. it was, and it was great because I thought Jackie Chan the whole time.
Yeah.
Using the towel.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was basically, it was a whip. It was yeah. an energy lash, but it wasn't, I think it was used once on the offense. The rest of the time, it was to deflect a weapon, yep. deflect away. It was a shield, like Vicky said.
Mm-hmm.
His weapon is a shield.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that it just goes into the whole thing of he's not an offensive type person.
He's not. He's not. He's,
which goes into his Hippocratic Oath and being a doctor and all those too.
Yeah, it's interesting to see this. I mean, to have a wizard, to have a magic user. Who uses his magic in the way that is, he's definitely more of the healer than, you know, more like a white mage, mm-hmm. if you're going to talk about it
well,
in D&D
really, if
terms,
you think about,
you know?
If you think about anyone who uses magic, the good guys are the ones who use it to protect and defend. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. bad guys are the ones who attack with it.
Right.
That goes straight to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yoda even said that straight up. The Force is used for defense and...
You forgot a Star Wars book?
No. It's for... the Force is used for defense and knowledge, not for attack.
Right.
Right. I mean, and he definitely used it for knowledge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to steal in the books.
Wait, is the books that in the library?
Was a great scene.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, making the portals in the library so Wong would look this way and he'd grab a book out of this side, look that way and grab a book off of that side.
The book right in front of him, and Wong's like.
Yeah. Wong looks around and looks back. The book he was looking at is missing.
And the fact that this movie brought in the multiverse and magic in. The huge way that it needed to. Like,
yeah.
We first saw a possibility of multiverse in Ant-Man when in the microverse.
Right.
And this basically gave you everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was, okay, like, I'm not an endorser of this, but I had to say that if you're 420 friendly, this movie is for you and your head's going to explode.
Yes. Yeah. For that was thinking, imagine if you're watching this on LSD.
Oh, right. My God.
But what?
I've got two. One with Wong listening to Beyonce, he acted like he knew who she was.
Yes. That was
funny. Then, the other one, when he gives him the paper, what do you think we're savages? Is
yeah.
Wi-Fi?
Yeah. It's the Wi-Fi password.
Yeah.
He says, savages.
He says, what's this like you're thinking about to tell
you? Is this my new name?
Shambhala.
Is this my new name?
Yes.
No, it's the Wi-Fi password. We're not savages.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And it was cool that the, I forget, what was the name of the place that they were at?
Was it Kathmandu?
No, the city was Kathmandu. No.
Oh,
the name of the place where they're training is in the middle of the city.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For something like this, you almost expect some monastery up on the top of a mountain somewhere.
Well,
but it was just...
They were dealing in different dimensions.
It was a door off of an alleyway with a bunch of, like, gurus sitting on the side that were...
Exactly. You have kind of like the fake outs on one side, and then the real deal is on the other.
And just this little doorway.
Yep. And then we have to mention that there's another Infinity Stone, which
yes.
they made obvious. They didn't have
this
to.
This is the Time
they
Stone.
They made sure to make it obvious that, oh, it's an Infinity Stone. But, I mean, they really didn't have to, because those of us who are fans would have figured it out.
Yeah.
Well, by making it obvious, you mean that they actually said straight up that this is an Infinity Stone.
Right. Right. And it was in the eye, which technically in the comics it's not, though, is it?
No.
That has nothing to do
But that will bring that into the Infinity War.
Right.
Right.
That way we can bring Doctor Strange in, and there's a reason for him to
and
be there.
And there's only one left to go that they haven't... Isn't it the Soul Stone? They haven't gotten
it. No, that's the one that's in Vision. I think the Soul Stone was in Vision.
I had this somewhere.
In his forehead.
But there's one they haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah, it's not the Soul Stone.
Tracking.
So, I know,
No, the Mind Stone is in Vision.
Oh, okay.
And this was the time, it's the Soul Stone, the orange one.
Then,
They haven't gotten to
what movies do we have left before Infinity War? We have Ragnarok. Spider-Man, which is not going to have the Infinity Stone.
No.
Or it could, but I doubt it.
My bet
would be Ragnarok.
Because Infinity has technically two parts, even though they're not calling it part one and part two, it might not show up in the first. So, that's when they could actually find it.
Like I said, if we do find it in a movie before, there's three Marvel movies next year, babe. You said, we know we have Spider-Man, Thor, and Guardians.
Guardians.
So I'm thinking, though, since they've already done a major thing with the Stone and Guardians... I mean, they did in Thor. Thor 1, I think, had... No.
Yeah.
Thor had the Tesseract, which was...
So, but I'm thinking that, for my money, I think that Thor... If they're going to introduce it in one of the movies coming up, it'll probably be Thor.
I don't know, because I think it could be part of Guardians, because they've already had one in the first Guardians.
Yeah.
And you have such a massive character coming with Ego.
Right.
In Guardians.
Okay.
That
he's so massive, he's almost planet-sized.
Yeah, exactly. But he could actually be the owner of the Soul Stone. Mm-hmm. That could create his soul. It depends what they do with the character.
Okay.
Right, so we got space.
But Feige has said it's definitely showing up in Phase 3, which means it's before the Infinity.
Yeah.
So we have space, we have time.
We have, let me see, they put the whole list on the site here.
Space, time, mind.
The Space Stone has been in Thor, the first Captain America,
was
and was in the Avengers.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
The Tesseract was the Space Stone.
Mine is the yellow one, which was in Avengers, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, and Civil War.
Because yeah, all where Vision shows up. Vision's at.
Right.
Reality is the red one that showed up in Thor Dark World.
Okay. Yeah, that's the ether.
Right. Power Stone is the purple one from Guardians.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange had the green time stone.
So that's what, five? It's
orange is the Soul Stone, and that's the last.
That's going to be
that's the one. That, isn't that the one that actually brings them all together or something? Or links
Yeah, yeah, that, yeah. That's one that goes in the middle of the gauntlet. So somebody's got to find the gauntlet. I'm calling it. I don't know why.
We've seen it twice.
One gauntlet you've seen in Thor.
Right.
And I think, it wasn't the Collector. Someone else had, in one of the other movies they showed one also. That's why everybody's like, wait a minute, they showed the same. It's like, no, you've seen both gauntlets.
You've seen both gauntlets. Yeah. You only need one.
I forget where the second one was. So, but as you're looking that up now, as we're getting ready to go out, since we have our big brownie bake-off bonanza coming up this weekend, it's time to bring out the brownie meter again, I think.
Yes, yes it is.
Because it's getting close to time on the show. So, Vicky, let's start with you.
Four.
You give it four brownies. Okay. This one for me. I think I actually enjoyed this better than I did a lot of Marvel movies. I'm giving it probably 4.75 brownies.
Wow.
It was almost a perfect movie.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it, I'll say 4.5.
Okay.
I'll say 4.5. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm, as far as magic goes, I enjoyed the mystic side of the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a great job of presenting that. And so, yeah, I'll give it 4.5. I'm looking forward to seeing how Iron Fist picks up the rest of it.
Okay. What do you got, Miss Dawn?
I will go with, kind of in between the two of you, I'll go with 4 2/3. Because it was awesome. Like, to me, this was the most visually awesome Marvel movie they've ever done.
Yeah. Just this was that, Marvel meets Inception.
Just for that sake alone. It's far beyond Inception. I mean, what you saw in the
world twisting.
Yeah, but what you saw in the ads for what looked like Inception went way beyond that. Because Inception didn't even reach that level.
But the one part where he's trying to run.
Yeah, and everything keeps shifting. And
it wasn't that he stopped. It's that the ground kept moving.
Yes, exactly.
He couldn't keep up with how fast the ground was expanding.
So I just for the visuals alone, this gets past 4.5 for me.
Yeah.
There were minor plot holes. Nothing that will affect anything that. If you're a fan, you might notice them, but most people won't. And it's made more money than the opening weekend of Thor and of the first Captain America.
Okay.
So it topped those.
Yeah.
And it's already.
And really, if you look at it, we were discussing this beforehand. For early November, this has made a really. It was a great opening, and it obviously won the weekend and all that. But if you look at some of the other Marvel movies, this doesn't even touch some of these Marvel movies that have come out.
No.
But it's also time of year.
Yeah.
Right.
If they would have released this in late May, early June, this would have been $200 to $300 million.
Easy.
It's just time of year.
And I mean, they're looking at about $85 million for the opening weekend here. It's already been playing internationally for a week. It opened last week internationally.
Yeah.
And they're looking at combining this week's international plus, you know, everything else for the 13 days. It's already at $325 million.
Wow.
Cool.
So.
Yeah. So for worldwide opening, that's pretty good, especially for early November, because we were saying this technically falls into a late fall movie. It's not even an early holiday movie.
Exactly. No, it's not.
I think our first big holiday movie is going to be Fantastic Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And especially if you consider Doctor Strange is, you know, yes, it's a comic book movie, but it's not really a family movie. It's not like the Avengers where you'd necessarily bring your kids to see it.
Yeah,
like it's not
there's
something.
A lot of stuff that needs explained. Almost.
Yeah, it's not something that a lot of kids are going to follow as well as they have other Marvel movies. So this is kind of the audience is cut down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
you're not getting quite the sales from all the families with their kids.
This one, I think this one almost it's not quite as much, but I think this was almost as much of a risk as it was when they did Guardians.
Yeah.
Or Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Because the Ant-Man, Doctor Strange is the character, he's been in the Avengers forever. People may have heard of Doctor Strange, but it's another one like Ant-Man that was an Avenger and everything else, but it's not as well-known a character.
Well,
but then again, they've done that with all of their characters. Look at Iron Man when they brought him out.
You have that plus the idea of having to bring magic in full force and making it look right, and you have yet another origin story. Like, that's one of the slight faults I have with it, because really, it's a straightforward origin story. Right. There's not a lot of depth to that portion
of it. But this one, really, it's as much a Doctor Strange origin as it is a magic origin.
Yes. Magic in the Marvel Universe, yes.
Exactly. Sure. The one thing I thought was awesome, though, was the fact that Wong, when he first shows Strange the vision of what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
When Mordo and Wong, he actually says straight up, he talks about how the Avengers, all these people do all this stuff, and the cosmic people do all their cosmic stuff. We actually take care of the third part of this world that no one else knew about. Right. So they know everything else that's going on out there.
Right.
But they're not worried about that. They're worried about protecting the magic and energy side.
Right.
And actually, things. One thing I meant to bring up, because it was so awesome, that the spells, the hand movements of the spells were actually choreographed. It wasn't just telling them to do certain movements. There's a specific type of hand dancing called tutting,
okay.
Which a lot of kind of like breakdance kind of vibe to it. And there's a magician by the name of Jay Funk, who he has videos on YouTube, and it's just awesome to watch him. He actually invented this language for them to do the spells. And basically the directors and that would tell him, we need something to go for this length of time. This is the sort of spell it is. Show us what you got. And yeah. He would basically choreograph something and tell them when something was supposed to show up in the air, when hand movements were a certain way.
I wonder if that is similar to the... I know you guys have seen it, and it was really made famous in Labyrinth, was the using the crystal ball, and the rolling the ball and actually making it look all natural,
mm-hmm.
and rolling back and forth.
I yeah, because that's a magician similar. Trick sort of
exactly.
thing,
exactly, that's
yeah.
the sleight of hand.
Yeah.
The one girl at Kamala Cobb that dresses like a fairy mm-hmm. and stuff is awesome with
she
that.
She does that, yeah.
And because of the ball being so clear, you can't tell whether it's actually moving or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's just
well, I mean, that has the hand
breaking,
movements, but this is very specific
yeah.
finger movements, too.
But I think
and,
it all...
It's an actual thing.
Yeah, it probably... works together type
yeah.
deal.
And I think it's just so. Just the fact that they took that amount of effort
mm-hmm.
to for the spells to work in this way without people just vaguely waving their hands around.
Right.
You know.
So the brownie meter says we're at least 4.5, if not better. This is one of the best, in my opinion, it's one of the best Marvel movies they've put out.
Yes.
Yes.
Because when it comes to actually, like I said, it was the fact, for me, what won it the most was that I forgot this was Benedict Cumberbatch. I was actually watching Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I wasn't watching Downey play Iron Man.
Right.
I wasn't watching Chris Evans play Captain America.
And in part, it helped with his accent, too. The fact
yeah.
that he not only gave up his British accent, he went all American, and I have to admit, at times he sounded like Tom Selleck. Like, if you shut your
yeah.
eyes, he sounded like Tom Selleck.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't drop it. It wasn't
yeah.
a bad accent. He's good at doing accents.
Yeah.
It was. You know, the thing is, I was, like, having... And I can't explain it, but, like, having had years of experience and exposure to Doctor Strange, and, you know, and every now and then he would show up in a an animated series.
Yeah.
But even that voice never really stuck with me, but for some reason, Cumberbatch got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And I
think what helped was the look.
Yeah.
He looked... like Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Yes.
Straight out of the comic pages
yes.
onto the screen.
Absolutely.
Is I think the most... Downey's close
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to looking like Tony Stark.
Right.
But this was... you take Cumberbatch and draw him into a comic book and put it right beside the Doctor Strange, the classic Doctor Strange,
yeah,
you got the same
yeah.
guy.
Okay, complete with the little gray.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
yeah.
like, it,
yeah, that was
yeah.
him.
I think a lot of that also is the difference between American actors and British actors.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a lot of the British actors... they are chameleons. Like, they are
oh, yeah.
very, very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that they fully do their research.
Oh, absolutely.
They
yeah.
And I'm sure that's just the difference in training.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have the theater training.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I think that's the big difference.
Yes.
He was full on, so with him doing that, he became, and so like what Ken said, you didn't realize who that was.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. And even Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One.
Yeah.
Yes.
She, like, every role she does, she looks completely different.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's
she just falls into it, and you just never know, but
mm-hmm.
she's always the character. It's never her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Like the whole scene where she just basically is messing with them, and she takes them all the way through
uh-huh.
all the different realms, And you're just like, you know, like, by the time it's all said and done, he's like, teach me. And she's like, no. And just leave. And I'm just like...
That's the last thing you expect.
And I'm like...
okay.
This guy who...
That's a lot of effort for to tell him no.
For somebody who doesn't believe in God, don't believe in magic, don't believe in any of that stuff, and then to have somebody put it in your face like that, and then for her to just not no anger, no emotion at all, just
nope.
No. And he's thrown out.
But yeah, I mean, obviously we're saying go see the movie.
Yeah.
And see it on the big screen. So don't wait for DVD on this one. You definitely get the DVD after, but you have to see what goes on in this multiverse magic world on the big screen.
Vicky and I, like I said, are going to go see it again in 3D because we didn't get a chance to see
it. You know what? Even if you wait for second run when it's only a few bucks to see the movie, that's fine, but you have to see it on the big screen.
Yeah. Doctor Strange is... Harry Potter on crack. I mean, like magic in that world.
It's shown in a certain way, but you don't get. It's not
like you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if that's the way magic operates in this world, if this world as we know it right now, mm-hmm. if magic is like that, I don't think I want to know about the battles that go on. Like, it's one thing for me to look up and see a helicarrier and know that. There is a real shield, there's a real Hydra. That's one thing. But knowing that if there's a such thing as magic, and if it operates like that, I'm cool with not knowing because that's a level of combat that I don't know if I can handle. I mean, Dormammu?
Yeah.
You know...
You don't want to know those things.
No. Well,
we're starting to run a little long. It's awesome. Go, like we said, go see Doctor Strange. Before we wrap up, I just want to say one more time, come out to Con on the Cob. Next time you hear us, it'll actually be from Con on the Cob.
Yep.
So, hopefully you guys are there with us to hang out. Are we recording a live show there, or how are we doing this?
There's a live show.
There's a live show on Saturday at 4 p.m.
So we get 2 hours? 4 p.m.
We get 2 hours.
Yeah, so well, we need at least an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So... We have Saturday at 4 p.m. at Con on the Cob. Come see us in the panel room.
Yep.
And we will be doing Geek Watch 1 live on stage. It'll and just like all of our shows, if there's anybody else in the room, you're part of the show. That's the way it works.
Yes.
This is a conversation of us sitting around. At some point, we're going to get another picture of us sitting here. We're just chilling on the couch just talking.
That's right.
So, but that was our Doctor Strange. That's Con on the Cob coming up. ConOnTheCob.com, oddball.info. You can find us at GeekWatch1.com. You can get any place on social media. Miss Dawn has us as GeekWatch1. Also, we want to know what you thought of Doctor Strange. Send us an email at geekwatch1@gmail.com. You can find us at the Tangent Bound Network and the Weeby Geeks Network. And I think that's all of our stuff.
You have covered it all.
That's and covered now, it all, yes.
All I have to say from there is to remember.
No matter where you go, there you are.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.